Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? I don't know, man. It's just like one day bleeds into the next. I get up early. I go to bed late. I don't know why. I just do. Every day feels like a week with no dates, and days have no names. I just know that, well, I got to do this today, so it must be Monday. That's what I know. It's all dictated by who I'm talking to. I'm talking to you. Mondays and Thursdays, I talk to you. And then I talk to people during the week. Some of them come over, like today's guest, Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips. He's actually been on the show. Both guests this week have been on the show. I don't usually do this, but I got Wayne today because he was here. He was on the show like back in 2012, episode 276. We did it in Oklahoma. I was performing in Oklahoma. He came to the show and I talked to Wayne in a hotel room in Oklahoma. And I feel like we talked a lot about fear of plane crashes. But I got a text from him a few weeks ago. He's going to be in LA. He wanted to know if he could come by and talk and do the thing because he's got the new record out. And I was like, why not? Why, if you're brave enough to come over, I'll put the plexiglass up and we'll do a fucking live one. We'll go one-on-one, face-to-face, mano-a-mano. And do the thing. So he came over and, it was great. I mean, it's nice to see him. It's nice to talk to people. That's the thing about this time that we live in. It's hard to talk to people. Masks are sad. We have to wear the masks and I wear mine. But when I look at all the other people in masks, it's like, I'm glad everyone's wearing them. But what a sad time. But it's important to reach out to people. It's important to talk to people one way or the other. I know I do these Instagram lives in the morning sometimes, and I just talk to the room full of strangers there from, 500 to 1,000 people kind of hanging around, listening to me ramble on. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're sad. Sometimes it's just the way I'm living, but it gets me connected, and I know that some people feel connected to that. But it's also important if you have friends to talk to them, if you have family to talk to them occasionally. No one's got any answers. No one can solve the problems. But I mean, it's nice to know they're there, isn't it? And I don't know why I'm less frightened. Maybe it's just because it's this hour or this 10 minutes or this day, or maybe it's just the spectacle of the incompetent huckster clown king and his minions. Maybe it's that becomes undeniable. What a fucking bozo piece of garbage person we have at the helm of this fucking bread and circus of conspiracy addled dum-dums and Christian end times death cult acolytes, just in this plague spreading parade of hate in the name of Jesus, in the name of liberty. And they're just too caught up and frenzied to know that they've been conned into eternal servitude in the fucking stupid section of hell by this fucking gorgeous George-looking runt of a lesser demon looking for a way out. And the only way out he can see is to stay in the saddle and use the fucking government as a money laundering operation. Maybe the clarity of that, all of that, maybe I assume that some people are seeing that. Maybe I assume that it becomes undeniable after a certain point. It's not even about stupidity. It's about shallowness. And it's about servitude, and it's about the need to follow, the need to make sense, is just exploited and distorted. It's just most people have been kind of shut off somehow. I think there is an evolution of entitlement and narcissism and self-actualization, empowerment, the idea of seeing yourself as a brand, a content-generating brand. You are a brand out in the world more than you're a person. So the idea of the brand, what is my brand? Who am I as a brand? How do I fit out there into the context of content? What am I? And that leads to a lot of like top five lists and either or questions and likes and dislikes and sort of this ongoing evolving resume of pop culture tics and strange sort of reaching back to a very short history of nostalgia. So how's your brand going? So all that effort into self-actualizing your personal brand to manufacture your personal content out in the world has left you intellectually crippled. And I'm no fucking genius. It's just I was trying to figure out where the shallowness comes from. It's that most people are not called upon to use their brains. They're called upon to repeat themselves, to honor the patterns that dictate their lives, to take in information that makes them feel good. Doing your own thinking is tricky. And sometimes it's hard to know if you're even capable of doing it. But if you don't try to figure that out, you're going to be part of some fucking parade, and you're not even sure where that ends or why people are watching it. But if your brand is intact, you know exactly what your likes and dislikes are and your top five or top tens of just about everything. And you take a relatively decent picture of a meal. Right? So I have been wrestling. It seems, I don't know if I've talked about this, that my grief has sort of evolved or morphed into a kind of baseline sadness. There was a blackout here at my house the other night, and I was just sitting in the dark for 2 hours in that silence of a weird blackout. Don't even know why it happened. I pulled out my cooler and put in the ice things and threw the meat in there. Didn't know how long it would go on for, but I sat there and I realized, you know, I feel that tugging at my heart, that weird, it's not depression, but it feels a little like depression where, you know, your spirit sags and you feel some sort of hand lightly holding your heart, you know, and it's coming from deep, deep somewhere, deep within you, deep within the ground, deep within the earth. I don't know, but it's just a little tug at your heart, and it kind of pulls your mind and it pulls your spirit and it pulls it down a little bit. It's just a tug of it's not bleak. It's just sad. It's heavy. There's a burden of sadness, of loss. So I guess now that the shock and trauma is over, then you can't help but revisit it if you've experienced some sort of tragic loss. How one person was here and then quickly they were gone and you saw them fade away. Now that's been months ago, and now there's just sort of this sadness, and it's just really what it is I miss her. I miss her. I miss Lynn. It's not that I'm lonely or that I miss having someone around. I miss her. And her not being here is final. And I got to live with that. And then you start thinking about the heart. What is your heart? What can your heart take, really? Many of you have sort of tucked yourselves away into something that's lasted a long time and you've built families or whatever. I just was not that guy. So what I do and what I've done over my life is I've been with many different people, some for a long time, some for short times. I've had my heart broken a few times. I've broken a few hearts, which is horrible. Leaving somebody because you have to, because it's the right thing to do with you, is not easy. It hurts. It's heartbreaking in its own way, even if you're the one that makes the decision. And then carrying the burden of hurting somebody else is what it is. That weighs on your action. of breaking that heart, and then giving your heart to somebody else and have that end. I've had that happen a couple of times. And it's just, how much can your fucking heart take? It takes a toll. This underneath, you know, everything that's going on in the world, it's hard to process. So I see a therapist, I talk to friends, I cry, but it's just life. It's a human thing, man. This is part of it. Heartbreak, loss, missing people that were once here and are no longer. But I bought some plants. Finally bought some plants for the front yard. I guess I'm going to hang out. And I planted a few in the ground. I guess that's a nice way to, I guess that's a fairly common way to feel regeneration or growth or do something to honor somebody. I should be more shallow. Either or, give me your top five. What are your likes and dislikes? So Wayne Coyne, he's a great front man of a great band. And the Flaming Lips, it's their 16th studio album. American Head is available now, wherever you get your music. And I was happy to see old Wayne. He's a diplomatic cat. He's a charming motherfucker. But he's also a psychedelic warrior. And it was nice to talk to him. Here's me and Wayne.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Coin. How's that? Can you hear it? Too loud?
Man.
Is it good? Too loud?
Man, you're good at this.
You want more? You want less? You good?
I think that's just perfect, yeah. So have you been your own engineer for like ever?
I have, man. I can't.
I mean, it's funny, you know, because that used to be, it used to be like a thing like this would have like 10 people doing it. You know?
Well, some guys, you know, will have a producer in-house. You know, my guy's in Brooklyn, and we've just worked it like this. How hard is it to produce two guys fucking talking? It's just the mic is what's important, and these are good mics.
Your show has always sounded good.
You use these?
I don't even know. I don't know what kind this is. I mean,
it's one of those SM7s, man. It's like sweet vocal tones. You don't know your mics.
Well, but you've got
I know.
You got padding and everything in here.
I know. We're kind of breaking the rules a little to get the ventilation going. Because here's the weird thing about the pandemic is like, I'm not, I know I'm probably good because I'm a fucking nut. I get tested every 2 weeks just because I'm a nut, right? But, like, I'm so paranoid that I'm the guy. You know what I mean?
You're the guy that's going to spread it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Why would you be the guy?
I don't know because, I'm a nut. I never feel
good.
But
you're healthy.
You ever feel good?
You mean, like, just physically?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I thought about this on the way over. You know, like, I think that's, I just knowing you, I mean, not knowing you that well, knowing you from your show, I know that about you. You know,
that
you're always.
But complaining?
You seem always what? No, you're worried. You know,
I'm worried.
I mean,
that's a nice way to say
I'm a worrier, too.
Yeah.
But you seem healthier than ever.
I am. I go up, I hike. I was mad I couldn't hike today because I can't breathe. And then, like, an hour or so ago, like, my eyes were hurting.
Oh, wow.
This fucking smoke. My throat, my chest feels fucked up.
I couldn't tell. You know,
I'm not
in LA that much.
Well, common for us either.
Oh, okay.
You know, we have fires, but it's the fucking apocalypse out there.
Is it?
Right? I don't know.
I mean, I didn't see. I mean, it's like hazy.
Right.
And then I see there is some.
Can you smell it?
A little bit, but. I mean, I remember pulling into L.A. In the 80s, and
right.
It would be so smoggy.
Right.
And no one cared then, there's a fire. And
did you notice the sun this morning? Did you have a...
Well, I have to say, you know, we drove in on was it late Tuesday? And it was already like that just from the wind blowing. Mm.
Did you make the run from Oklahoma?
Yep.
Mm. So you drove through my home state, New Mexico?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
That's
where at?
I grew up in Albuquerque.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I
been through there hundred thousand times.
Yeah, I was I drove up to Taos. I saw that.
I saw your posts and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
So nice.
It is. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's not the greatest drive in the world, is it, from Oklahoma?
Well, we've got a nice family car now.
Yeah.
A brand new Volvo. And man, you know, it just does everything for you.
It
tells you if someone's coming up behind you. It'll stop for you.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh.
It's good. Yeah, it helps when you're texting and looking at your phone.
Well, it's just another
thing. Slam on its own brakes.
I mean, you know, I try to remind people that there were plenty of car accidents before people could text. You know, there's plenty of reasons just to fuck up and, you know, kill somebody.
But there's more because of that, I imagine. I have to assume.
Right. But even getting over here with the way the GPS and all that works now, it's like, oh my gosh.
You know, it's amazing.
Just, yeah.
We don't have to think at all. Finally.
Well, you know, I've been to LA. I was thinking about it.
When was the first time you came?
1984.
With the band.
Yeah, 1984, 1985, something like that.
So with the original band.
Yeah. This is the only
kids,
band.
Your kids.
Yeah. 23, 24. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kids enough compared to now.
Oh, yeah. And what were you doing? What'd you do?
First time we drove out here, my old man had like a, one of these, I forget what it was, like an old Pontiac, long car.
Right.
We put a trailer on it.
Yeah.
It was the only car like that we were getting. We couldn't rent a van or anything back then, you know. Put a trailer on it. And we crashed. There was some road construction, and we crashed, and the trailer flipped over.
In L.A.?
Like on the outside of L.A.
Okay.
So we're driving all night.
Didn't even make it.
Well, as it was happening, that's what we thought.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, our first trip, and at first you're just lucky that you're not dead.
Right.
And then you think, oh, you know, we fucked this up, and now we're not going to make the show. But... yeah, the trailer turned over. We had to get out, and it's all like it's damp. I mean, it's all dewy. It's in the early morning, and it's all muddy. And we turned the trailer over, and for some reason, the whole thing just works again. We pull off, and we get on down the road to the show later. And as we're unloading, nothing is even messed up.
None of the equipment's fucked up?
Nothing. All I remember, and this is a superstition I still have.
Yeah.
Even till now.
Yeah.
This is from 1984. I took my shoes off. I was a passenger.
Yeah.
I just got done driving. I took my shoes off, and I made a sandwich.
You know,
some kind of cold, you know, turkey or something, chicken or something you get in a thing. And I remember we were swerving, thinking we're going to die. And after it's all over, my hand has squished the sandwich. Yeah. You can't see it on your podcast here, but my hand has squished the sandwich in the... bread and the meat is, and I remember thinking, oh man. And then I put the sandwich down, and then I'm annoyed that I have to put on my shoes.
Uh-huh.
You know, and ever since then, I'm just more like ready, like a fireman, you know, I'm ready to go because this could happen any second.
I thought you were going to say something like, yeah, whenever I'm approaching a city, I have to squish a sandwich in my hands because I'm superstitious.
See, that would be you. It would be. Like, it would go deeper with you. For me, it was just...
You're prepared.
But you're right. I don't really eat a sandwich. I don't eat a sandwich anymore. Maybe I'm not on your level, but I'm almost.
No, you're on the road, man. You're making... That's probably what all you guys were eating.
It just annoyed me that I didn't have any shoes on.
Right.
Like if I really needed to help my friends, I'd have to put my shoes on first or go around and without
shoes. Oh, I see what you're saying. So if there's a gas fire and the car's about to go up, you don't have... There's no time to put your shoes on.
I don't know. It's like... You know, how relaxed should you be when you're just traveling down the highway at 90 miles an hour?
I think you should be pretty relaxed.
You think? I think you should be like alert and prepared. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but look, man, it's like a straightaway. I'm driving. You're driving through Death Valley. You did it the other day. You're driving through the Mojave.
Yeah.
There's a point where you're like, I don't got to freak out. I'm not going to freak out.
I agree. I mean, it's almost too relaxing.
Yeah.
That's why driving and podcasts are so perfect.
Exactly. Now I'm going to obsess about that.
About the sandwich?
No, that fucking AC noise.
Oh, that's okay.
Like, you're only the second guest I've had with the plexiglass setup.
Oh, I see.
And I for some reason in my mind, it's like it's essential to get into the habit of having airflow.
Oh, I got you. Yeah,
but
yeah.
What the fuck do I know?
So the flow. So we're not this.
So there's no regrouping air. There's no, like, I don't have the air conditioner on. Yeah, but you know, look, I'm sure we're both fine. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, I was tested just the other day.
So, wait, I'm going to go tomorrow. Yeah. It's not going to help us today, but I'm sure I'm fine. We can speculate.
It really is. I know. Then you'll read, like, well, you could have got tested, and then it didn't show up till today. And I know it's
you go. The test only buys you as much as time as it takes you to go into anywhere.
Well, it's but I haven't really been anywhere either. That's,
is it that, freaking you out though?
No,
on a day to day basis.
No, not really. No, I mean, in the very beginning, you know, I mean, I didn't really know if we were going to start to see just bodies laying in the street. You know what I mean?
People dropping dead. Like yeah.
You didn't know how alarmed
the plague is.
Yeah, you should be. You know, but you know, really, this is the way it really is. It's, you know, people are dying and people are really sick, but it's just normal. It's just a normal day out there. You can't really tell.
Well, I understand what you're saying. Like, every day I get up, you know, I sit on my porch and I don't feel the presence of death.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than inside my own brain.
But I've watched a couple of your morning coffee things. Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, I mean not the entire thing, but you know, you're really good at reading the screen.
Yeah.
And still being present in the, you know, while you're being...
But I notice when I look at it, there's long pauses when I'm reading. But who gives a fuck? I don't give a fuck.
I know sometimes I would forget that you're reading and I'd be like, oh, dude, he's...
Or I'm just responding to things and it sounds like I'm just thinking them, like out of nowhere I go...
I would have done this. I would have been like, I would forget I'm on.
Right, right.
And I'd just be... Yeah, I'd be like, oh, he's forgot. But no, you're reading. Now I know. Yeah.
So
you wouldn't forget you're on. You've been on for 20 years. You know, like you're always on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a new thing, that IG thing. I didn't do it for a long time, but now because I don't know, man. You know, it's sort of helping me in the sense that, you know, I'm not working in front of audiences, and you know, I would do those things maybe once or twice a week.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But you know, it's been a few months, you know, since the tragedy that I've gone through.
Yeah, yeah.
And
dude, not to interrupt you, but we listened to your stuff that you did right after that.
Yeah.
You're inspiring. I told you that when you were going through all that, and it's still inspiring to be around you even right now. And
so sad.
It is. It's the heaviest stuff ever. And but what you do though is you talk about it, and you're right in it, and that's a valuable. The truth is so valuable, and
that's
a heavy cool thing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people would just decide, this is something I'm not going to talk about this or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I don't know.
I'm so glad you talk about it.
Oh, thanks.
I hope it helps you. It definitely helps us, you know, listening to you go. And because I really did worry about you, and just hearing you and knowing that you're, I don't know. It's powerful. It really was.
Yeah. I didn't know how else to handle it, you know, and I'm fortunate in that, like, you know, I put it out there. I didn't feel like I had to do it, but I felt like my audience has been through, not unlike you, like in a sense that, you know, you have a unique relationship. I think the Lips have a unique relationship with their audience, like that there is an element of salvation to the event
of
what you do.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of people that, you know, kind of look forward to it with all their life and heart to get out and, you know, get to where you take them. And for me, like, I know that my audience had been through a lot with me, and that, like, it's not so much it was for them, but it's like, I don't, because my producer was like, take the time. And I'm like, for what? I got to, I'll talk about it. I'll live it.
Well,
let's live it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but now that it's sort of settled in, and like, you know, like today was heavy. You know, you had, some days it's heavy, man. You know, you just think, like, you know, the fragility of it all.
Well,
you know, like she's gone, and like, I'm here.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's devastating, and it's devastating on a day to day basis. But it's fundamentally human. Like, in talking to you about, like, you know, when you think about the psychedelic experience, or the sort of continuity of things, which you seem to think about, what I'm going through is something everyone goes through. So
well, but a lot of people go through it and they don't articulate anything about it. And I think that's where, I mean, it, yeah. You know, I'm lucky I get to do music and I love writing songs. And so you sure. just, but part of, you know, even you being a performer, you know, part of you doesn't always know what you're going to say. I right. say that about songs all the time. You know, you're not sitting there thinking, I must say this.
Right, right, yeah.
But something in you wants to say something. And really, that's it. I mean, we overuse the word therapy, but yeah. it is therapeutic to say it out loud, to
right.
say it, even if nobody else hears it in a way. You know, just you expressing it, sure. even if it's just to your own ears again, there's just something about that.
Especially in a world full of bullies and in a world full of, you know, sort of kind of knotted up emotions.
Well, I mean, what's great about your show is that it's not just a soundbite. You know, it's not just a couple of moments where you've got to throw all this. It's got to be heavy. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be quick. You know, you can talk and you can keep, you can go,
yeah.
you can keep the idea flowing around. And man, there's not even very many people in life that do real conversations like that.
You know? No one, you know, I noticed that. I yeah. used to like to have those conversations. You know, when you grew up in, you know, it's not the Southwest. I guess, what is Oklahoma? The Midwest?
Midwest, yeah.
But there was a time in our lives, like if you don't grow up in a big city where you're just wandering around talking to people.
Sure, yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
and
but even like the driving around in the
yeah.
van.
Oh
you
yeah,
know,
all day.
We would have conversations that would last for months. You know, you would have started it at the beginning of the tour.
Yes,
you have another 10-hour drive, and you get back to it.
The
you
evolving
know?
Conversation,
yeah. And now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's plenty of people that I know that
yeah.
You know, you can sit there and talk with, but most stuff isn't it's not in depth, it's not reflective, it's not oh, I'm learning something as we're talking about it. I mean, your show is so great like that. It's almost like you're learning stuff from your guests,
yeah.
and they're learning stuff from you while it's happening.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. I'm learning
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah,
but like
it's amazing.
So, last time I talked to you was like a million years ago.
It was. I actually tell people. I used to say it as a joke. It was like in the mid-70s when you and
yeah.
I talked.
It felt like it. It was like
because we could be like 70s characters.
I know.
But I, you know, some people know it's not the set wasn't the 70s, but some people just say, sure.
It might as well have been. Yeah.
I mean,
I did the show and we were in the hotel room. We talked a lot about fears of planes.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But then went to your show afterwards
yeah.
and man, it was great.
Yeah, it was kind of wild.
It was great. It was a great. I mean, you were
the trippy.
I mean, you're
place.
Funny. You're funny and all the time, really.
Oh, thanks.
But you know, when you're in the arena there, when you're in
yeah.
the theater,
yeah,
it's like, oh my gosh.
Somebody asked me,
so pathetic, but so great, and but you know, that is the thing that people relate to. I mean,
yeah.
it's difficult for anybody to be as brutally honest about themselves as you are.
It's terrible. But
I'm laughing right then. It is.
It's what I do.
No, it's amazing.
But like when I remember we talked a lot about plane crashes. You talked about your brothers. How are your brothers?
I'm trying to remember. Everybody seems to be about the same. I mean, maybe one of my brothers has OD'd since then. Trying to think of when that was.
Like dead,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
How many are there?
Well, I've got Tommy, my oldest brother.
Yeah.
Ken is next to him. And then my sister, Linda. And then Marty is the one that OD'd on some sleeping medication.
Oh,
he was taking.
Jesus. On purpose?
No. I think it was just, yeah. I mean, he just, you know,
yeah.
just by accident.
I'm sorry.
So, yeah, for
how,
sure.
How
yeah.
old was he? He's your older brother?
Just a little bit older than me. I'm 59 now, so he would have been, he would have been 60, 61. Yeah.
Was he struggling with the thing?
I don't want anybody to feel sad for me or my brother. I mean, he lived such an insane life. As you know, people that
yeah.
do, and they've lived 1,000 lives. They should have been dead when he was 12. It's just so crazy.
12's young, but yeah.
And so... You know, he did every drug that was available. Uh-huh. He did everything that he wanted to do. So, yes, very sad in a sense, but you know, when
no stone unturned,
right?
Yeah,
he didn't hide from anything yeah. that was scary or dangerous, like you and I. I mean, I always was afraid of stuff.
I'm a bit of a pussy, yeah. For sure. I mean,
he would be racing motorcycles drugs.
No,
you know, like
that guy.
Whoa,
yeah. I know.
And just man,
I've always sort of looked up to those guys,
yeah.
and you know, and like
yeah.
you know, aspired to be that guy.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm the guy, and like, all right, so I push down two and it's in second. You know, I like can't. I mean, there's just those dudes that just they don't think they're going to die, and they don't.
Well, no, that's what I mean. He was exactly like that. I'm not that it still wasn't. Bad or horrible, but it was there was 1,000 times that I thought I was going to get that call, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you get that call, and yeah.
So what was the funeral like? Did you do like a Flaming Lips New Orleans style funeral?
I think it was by his request. We took his ashes,
yeah,
the cremated ashes in a big thing,
mm.
and we drove around the racetrack where he would race. On
really?
Drugs.
Yeah.
That sounds bad.
Well,
but it's all true.
I mean, I've done drugs. You've done drugs. But
no.
We just didn't race a car.
I haven't done like that type of those, oh. Of that level.
Oh, I don't know.
You
I know.
Which I would ones, just
which,
do
which ones was he racing on?
Everything. I mean, if you think of, like everything, which is, yeah.
Yeah.
Which made him like a superhero, sure. So, superhuman. You
so
know.
You took the ashes and you drove around?
Drove around the back. We were sat in the back of a truck and then we'd spread them out. And I mean, it was.
You and your other brother?
Yeah, yeah. It was absurd. It was great. You know? And
great.
That's what you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want something like that just to be like, this is the way he lived his life. This is great. And it wasn't, it's not overly sad. When I, you know, things like this happen, but it allows you to think of them a lot, you get to remember them and think about them. And
right.
You know, and we're not, I wasn't young when this happened. So, you know, when these things happen, if you're in your a teenager in your even early 20s, you know, it's devastating. But by the time you get to be in your 50s.
Yeah. By the time you get to have the thoughts of like any day now,
yeah.
you know, right.
Yeah.
Then it's different.
Or that you're just used to, you know, there's a time in your life mm-hmm. when you just have never thought about it. You've never thought that you're going to die or anything is going to die. You just have never given any thought.
Yeah.
And then you get this such a punch in the face, such a
right.
wind blown out of you. And you don't ever, you know, for me, I don't ever want that again. I always want to be prepared and always want to be a little bit aware that there's tragedy out there all the time.
When was the first time? Because like, you know, my best buddy in high school, he died. I've known plenty of people that died. You know, like
why? What happened?
Well, he died after high school. I don't know.
Oh, I got you.
But not long. I mean, he wasn't. He was in his 20s.
Yeah.
But he had this massive asthma attack. And it was tragic. But I, you know, but it was like what I experienced with Lynn dying is it shifts your DNA, man. I mean, it's like there's some other thing that clicks in when somebody you love, you know, dies tragically or something is removed from you that dramatically that you were so connected to.
Yeah.
Something clicks in. And I don't think it's unusual. I think it's totally human. I think it's there's this every cell in your body realizes like the loss, but also like this shit is fragile,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
that, you know,
yeah, yeah.
and it's.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
here 1 second and it's gone.
Well, and there really is, the world is chaos that all the time.
When was the first time you experienced that? Have you experienced that?
Well, I talk about it in a song, in one of our new songs. So I've talked about
it. Oh,
really?
It in American Head?
Yeah, on American Head. It's called Mother, Please Don't Be Sad. And so it's a story of when I was working at this, did you have the Long John Silver's in
of course.
In Albuquerque?
Of course we had Long John
not
Silver's.
Not of course. I mean,
we had
not
all
everybody.
Of them. We had all of them. We even had some that the other places don't. We've got Blake's Whataburger.
Don't know that
right.
one.
Right. Do you have Whataburger in Oklahoma?
We have Whataburger.
You had Whataburger? Wasn't everywhere.
We would
do you have
be
Piggly
a little
Wiggly?
Bit.
You have Piggly Wiggly?
No.
Oh, do you
no.
have Circle K?
Circle K,
okay,
yeah.
Good. All right.
I mean, we would be a little bit of a test market. Like if it works,
Do you remember when Schlotzky showed up?
Yeah, that was
a big day.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in high school, we're about the same age, where you go drive, when there was a new fast food place, you're like, holy fuck, this Schlotzky's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It almost felt fancy. Yeah. I remember when Wendy's happened.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big day, the fresh square burgers.
I know. I don't know why, like, back then it just sort of seemed like now we get to have more, you know, and fast food, I mean, it is good. You know what I mean? It's like,
of course,
bam,
it's good.
You know, and it's,
I used to get cravings for McDonald's cheeseburger, just straight up. Just a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And, you know, not even with fries. Just like, if I'm going to eat it, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, and it doesn't really taste like a cheeseburger. It just tastes like a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you remember when the Big Mac happened? We were kids.
Yeah.
We were alive for that.
Yeah. I mean, used to be,
that was,
you know,
a messy
sandwich. Even it still is.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
I don't know why
they never.
You had one lately? You had one?
Well, someone had one, and then they were trying to eat it in the car. Even though I was driving, it was still messy even for them. I'm like, that's just too. You're right.
I haven't seen a Big Mac compared to.
Like the cheeseburger. Cheeseburger, it's like, yeah, it's just,
it's tight.
Man,
it's tight.
It's in that bun.
It's tight, man. It's not,
you don't have to worry about
it. You can't even see
it. Yeah. Yeah. It's all like
the Big Mac
in there.
It's just like got that sauce, man.
It's got those little squares of lettuce around the outside of it, and it's just flopping everywhere.
Yeah. But Long John Silver's.
Yeah, but they're not around even now.
No, they're gone. It was a big undertaking, the Long John Silver's. Like, there was a costume that people had to wear. I guess everyone wears a costume at a fast food place.
No, but I mean, I would work, not every Saturday, but when I would work on the Saturday,
right.
I would have to wear the outfit. Pirate outfit with a patch that went over your eye.
Come on.
It was hard.
Were you the pirate, or were you working, behind the register? Were you hired to be the pirate?
I'd be cooking, yeah.
With an eye patch?
Yeah, and you know, it's difficult, you know. I mean, like, two or three years ago, I was wearing an eye patch when we'd perform as the Flaming Lips, you know. Mm-hmm. But I would have a hole in it, and I could see out of it, you know.
What was it? Why'd you wear it?
Just to look crazy, you know, it wasn't some sort of reference point
to your youth?
No, it started.
Purge a demon?
I had.
get the Long John Silver's out of me.
Well, I had it because I have these confetti launchers, these handheld confetti launchers. I have about 50 of them. I shoot them all during the show.
Yeah.
And they're in a big, like, drum case.
Yeah.
So I can grab them whenever I want.
Right.
And one night I grabbed one, and the trigger is, you know, it's connected to a CO2 cartridge, and the trigger is just a little thing. If you pull it, it shoots out. Well, I grabbed it, and the trigger got caught, and it shot me right in the eye.
Ooh.
It's got a lot of velocity, you know?
Yeah.
And it hit my eye so...
That's a violent celebration. Shooting yourself in the face with a confetti gun.
Just when we're getting ready to go on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it hit my eye so hard that I couldn't tell if, like, half my head was gone or if I was fine. You know, it's like you don't know for a couple of minutes if this is...
Yeah.
And I held my... head, and I went over to one of the guys, because we're all getting ready to play and it's all dark and lights are out.
Yeah.
And I said, look in my eye and see if it's just a big hole there.
Yeah.
And I pulled away, and they were like, that doesn't look like nothing.
You really were in that much shock that you're like, weren't clear whether your eye was not in your socket?
Well, it just hit so hard. It was like numb, you know? It's like you're waiting for the pain to come.
It would have been blood and shit. But yeah.
Well, or it's just a hole for like 30 seconds.
It's and then the
blood is going to
stuck in your eye socket.
But everybody's like, no, it doesn't look like anything. But I couldn't even see, you know. And so for most of the show, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's what shows are. You do what you got to do, you know. And I really was very thankful. Like, I never realized what having two eyes, how great it is.
Really?
Because
take it for granted.
Well, of course, you know. And there I was this whole time just like, man, you know.
Yeah.
Like, even this distance that we have right now to the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, it's all.
Right. You got to have the depth perception.
Man.
With just one.
Yeah. I'd be hitting
everything's flat.
I'd be hitting my face, and I'd be just, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. So this Long John Silver's. I, you know, back then there just is no reference as like, I don't even know if I'm 17 or 18, but I'm, you know, I started working there when I was 16 years yeah. old, kept working there into the early 90s. Uh-huh. So started in 1977, kept working, not exactly all the time, but back and forth till early 90s.
When
we got signed to Warner Brothers.
You yeah. worked at Long John Silver's on and off for
I did.
A decade?
11 or 12 years, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
I know. I mean, I'd built up so much.
You were so much what?
Vacation time. We could go on tour for 6 weeks, and I'd still get paid.
Really? You were a lifer. You're a
Long John Silver.
Did you ever wear the outfit on stage?
No, no. I mean, by then it wasn't much. It was just one of those silly shirts yeah. and a bandana. But I would. I don't, you know.
No,
would,
of course.
It looked cool enough. Sure. You know? But so there's a famous murder that happened in Oklahoma City, the Sirloin Stockade murders.
I remember those.
And it was a couple of, a guy and his brother and his wife went around to a couple of places and robbed the restaurants and would... put the employees into the walk-in cooler and then shoot them through the head.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And just mysteriously, like, there's no... I remember it happened and, you know, there's no clues. It's like, you know, who would do this? You know, what's going on? You know, no, it's just random stuff, you know? So it's big news.
Yeah.
You know, it's on the news every day. It's in the paper every day and all this. And if you work at a restaurant, a fast food restaurant, you know, this stuff is just in your mind. You know, it's just everybody's
You're
always
vulnerable.
Talking about it. Yeah. So we're about to close up and these guys run in the front door, which isn't that unusual. But then they, you know, there's like a side door where the bathrooms and then the cash register is and they just burst through.
Oh, behind. So now they're on your side.
Yeah. You know, the counter is here, but then they just burst through, you know.
That moment of like, what's happening?
Well, you know, at first you just don't really know. It's, again, it's this chaos, the chaos of the world. You have no idea what's going to happen. Then suddenly it's just, man, you know.
Yeah.
They've got these guns and they're just so pissed off. You know, they're ahead of you. You know, they're already
they're there to scare the shit out of you.
They're angry and they're pissed and they want the money and you just get the feeling they'll shoot you. Of course they would, you know, and they you know, get on the ground, motherfuckers, get on the ground. And,
really?
You know, just 20 seconds earlier, I'm just ready to get off work. I'm just a dork cooking the last hush puppies. And then, you know, suddenly, and I don't know why, and it must be the adrenaline and stuff that happens to you when it's flight or flight or something, you know. I really did think I was going to die. I remember just
on the ground?
On the ground. And they're screaming at the assistant manager for her to open up the safe. And you just don't, you know, you think, well, this is because other people have been killed around the city, you know. And I really did think I'm going to die. They're going to shoot me. You know, and I remember thinking about, I was going to stop at my mother's house afterwards. I would stop there every 3 or 4 days and drop off my dirty uniform, and I would talk for a while, and then I'd go to my apartment or whatever. And I remember thinking, my mother's going to worry where I'm at because I'm not going to show up at the, you know, she's going to start thinking it's getting late. I wonder where Wayne is, and I'm thinking
if you're dead,
and I'm thinking she's going to start to worry. And then that thing that you see in movies or whatever, where the cops, you know, hey, Wayne works at Long John Silver's and there's been a robbery and he's been killed. And, you know, this all just flies through your mind. And I don't know why it's so, you know, it wasn't more of a panic to do something else. It was just like, fuck, this is how I'm going to die. Like, I'd never thought of it before.
It's nice that you thought about, like, maybe I should call my mom.
Not call. I
but
mean,
no,
the,
no, I know.
Like, just
but,
that.
But that's what your thought was, like, she's going to be worried.
Yeah. And then I wanted to tell her, you know, she would just be like, why did they do this to Wayne? And I just wanted to know, it's like, mother, this is just the chaos of the world. We weren't doing anything wrong. And this is just the way it was. I wasn't out causing trouble. And, there's no why to it. Yeah. Yeah. Like, exactly. You know, and so that was the part me from beyond wanted to let her know, like, this isn't, the, you know, this was just, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's, you know,
yeah, I mean, I think about that too in light of Lynn's death. It's sort of like you can't, it's almost like you can't ask those questions if you want to maintain your sanity. You know, like you cannot, you know, like, you know, there's these moments where you have these God moments or whoever in the movies or whatever, where someone dies and you're like, why?
Well, yeah.
There's
yeah,
no
yeah.
fucking answer to that.
It's not like that in real life. No, no, there is no answer. And there's not, it's better that there's no answer. You know, to me, this, I wasn't, I mean, I've known plenty of people that have looked for trouble and have deserved sure, to get sure. killed. I've known, you know, there's plenty of that, but this was just a random,
right.
you know, and sure, they were robbing us and this, you know, they were in the wrong or whatever, but it didn't hit me like that. It didn't strike me like,
so how does this, you know, play into the, is there a theme to the record?
Well, I think
the chaos of the world, is that what you're dealing with?
I think we just started to sort of highlight, we had a few songs that started to seem like we were singing about some, you know, nostalgic 70s stuff. Now, I'm almost 60 years old, but Steven, the other songwriter
yeah.
you know, in the group, he's 8 or 9 years younger than me, but he's, you know, he was in a big family like I was, had older brothers,
uh-huh.
drugs, violence, crazy
yeah.
shit, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that we would be talking about, it's happening to me when I'm 17 or 18, but a lot of stuff's happening to him when he's like 10 or 11, you know.
From that era.
Same type of stuff.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. So they're yeah. like the way things impress upon your mind are different.
Well, or just that it's drugs, it's 70s, it's older brothers.
Well, yeah,
it's
because like
death, you know.
Like even I remember, like I'm 57, so you're a couple years older than me, I guess. But mm-hmm. like I remember when, don't you remember when you were a kid, like, you know, 8 or 9 and everything was the 60s?
Well, yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, yeah. I was born in 63, so 69, I'm 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And just, like, what everything looked like, what people looked like.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, you just wanted to be part of that shit.
It was cool.
Groovy, man.
Well, and when you're young, it's quite easy to believe the utopia optimism that was happening. I mean, for me, it was wonderful.
I just wanted to have long hair in those pants.
Man, I still do.
You do. You're in it. You've got all the pants and long hair you want.
But so this, you know, this awakening uh-huh. of when you're 17 or 18 years old, this, it's like what you talked about. Suddenly, it's like, this shit is fragile.
No.
Which I'd never... I don't know. You know people in high school that get killed, and you know it, but it doesn't happen to you.
Right, I know it. You know? I always knew it in my mind. You know, however panicky I was, like, I don't want to die. Am I sick? Am I dying? You know,
yeah.
And then sometimes if you freak yourself out enough or you're in a situation like you were, you feel the proximity,
yeah.
right? So there's
yeah, yeah.
there's an insane yeah, existential yeah. panic there. But when someone you love goes, then you're like, wow. Then it's like, you know, all of a sudden you're like... It's a different feeling. It's tangible, it's real, and you're dealing with an absence. You know, you can't make that up in your head. You feel it. You feel it more.
Well, I mean, I think in movies and even in music,
right.
it's such an accelerated thing that it does.
Mm.
You know, you can feel nothing at the very beginning of a song. It starts to play, and suddenly you're feeling all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then the song ends and you're kind of back to your regular life, you know.
And then you play it again to see if it'll work again.
Which it kind of does.
Sure, it'll work. Yeah. If you're careful, it'll work your whole life.
But, you know, real life doesn't just stop like that. You know, the flow doesn't just flow over you. It's just always kind of, it's always kind of there,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But I remember after this happened, just being aware, like, anything could happen.
Right.
You know, I still am like that now. You know, like even staying across town,
yeah.
you know, I still think someone could break into this house. I mean, you know, you see murder documentaries
no, dude,
all the time.
I know. Every night I bought a bat. You know, I got a bat. But, you know, like, You know, but the, here's the weird thing. Here's what I was thinking of. Like, I think that all the time. Yeah.
You know what I got? I got some hornet spray.
There you go.
See, and instead of like a gun or a bat, it's like, I don't want to shoot you.
I don't know if I'm going to get the bat in time.
Well,
yeah, but if you, by the time, like, the thing is, like, I got an alarm on my house. You got an alarm, don't you?
Well, I do, but I don't always set it because it's like it goes off so much that you're
kind of... So you can't set it?
Yeah.
Yeah, my fear is like that someone's going to hit me in the head when I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
It's very specific. I've talked about it with other people.
That, you mean like they just come in and bludgeon you to death?
To me, that's the scariest thing. Like,
well, yeah.
It's just like, yeah. It's like, the, like how Bob Crane died. Some lunatic.
I was thinking exactly Bob Crane. He was staying in some like sleazy hotel with
and
some
the weird buddy. Something went wrong in his buddy's head.
Well, we're lucky. I mean, I've got a big house. We have
got weird buddy.
We got dogs, and we have some element of.
But what I was thinking though too is like I grew up in New Mexico. There was guns everywhere. You're in Oklahoma. You knew friends with guns.
I know, but we didn't have them.
I didn't have them. But I'm just saying that like the menace of it.
Yeah.
Like I remember like so we used to drive around. You know, you get your license when you're 15 in New Mexico, driving around, go where the kids are.
Yeah.
And like some dude I know, like someone they were driving around, they got smart with somebody, and some guy fucking shot a 38 into the door. Didn't kill my friend, but he had that bullet hole in his fucking door.
Well, again, I know it's. It's like we're lucky that we're.
I'm speaking from some sort of weird white privilege. I mean, there's fucking war zones in this country, and I'm talking about this one event with a 38 that almost hurt my friend.
Well, no, I think we're just lucky. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even want to be around it. I mean, there were protests, earlier in the summer, and especially in Oklahoma, it's like I mean, maybe it's probably true
everywhere
now,
yeah.
But I didn't want to go just, I mean, we have a little baby and it's like, I just didn't want to be, even if I'm not being specifically shot at, it's like just some place where bullets are going and people are pissed off.
You don't want to raise the possibility of you dying exponentially just by being at a place.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had moments in my life though, like here's what I was going to ask you, because like the weird thing about death is that I've definitely, and I'm sure you have as well, just given our lives, I've definitely been in situations that were not going good.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm like, this isn't when it's going to happen.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've definitely had that. Because it kind of reminded me of the being on the floor, but it was the opposite. You felt that it might be the end of you. But I've been in cars with fucked up people going over, like, where it's sort of like, he's going too fast, and I think he just ran over a curb. and I'm in the back seat going like, it's not going to happen like this.
Oh, I see.
It's not going to happen.
See,
this ain't going to happen.
I think I would have just been, I would just be so certain. Like, why wouldn't it? I mean, we talked about the plane crashes.
I can't do that anymore.
People will say, well, there was a plane crash yesterday. So now today, of course, it's not going to crash today. How could that happen? I'm like, that's bullshit. It's like they happen all the time. Yeah. I never.
They don't happen all the time.
Well, they really don't. They really don't. But when you're on one, you think, well, why wouldn't it happen? I always think.
Did I pull the short straw on this trip?
Well, I don't.
You're more likely to die in a fucking car.
Well, I know. And then if I really didn't think it was going to work, I just wouldn't get on. I wouldn't buy a plane ticket.
Not.
But it's only
not.
Once you sit there.
Now you can almost like fly privately and on a major airline. Because no one's fucking, I don't think a lot of people are flying right now.
I know. I haven't yet.
No, me neither. No. Are you kidding me? I drove to fucking New Mexico, almost lost my mind. Getting you stopping for gas.
But that's not that hazardous now. I mean,
there was no, when I was driving, I got to Needles, California, not even out of California, before Arizona.
Yeah,
I walk in and there was no distancing. Half the people were wearing masks.
Oh, shit.
People were talking. Yeah. I had to piss. And I'm like, after that, I'm like pissing outside.
Well, we pee a lot outside. Yeah.
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 Fuck that.
Well, I know, but... I mean, so in that way, I suppose we were more used to it because, and now the idea that your hands are touching it, it doesn't feel as scary as it was,
it's just like, you know what to do, you know what I mean?
Well, I understand though, you go into those places where it's just too many people.
I'm just sort of like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So the album you sent me before, the King's Mouth album, that was a big symphony thing, right?
I forget what all I've sent you. So we had the King's Mouth is a big it's part of an art installation.
Oh, that's right. Which one was this with the symphony?
The symphony one was recorded, I think, 2016 with the Colorado Symphony.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing, amazing.
I can't imagine for like you, like to have that interpreted like that. Who did the score of something like that?
It took a couple of years to sort of organize it. But I mean, luckily there's symphonies around the country that really do it all the time. So they're kind of, you know, always.
But setting. Didn't somebody have to make it a score?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I forget the guy's name, but we were working with him a lot. You know?
How would that feel?
Well, to tell you the truth, I mean, we had done a few things living in Oklahoma City, you know, with the Oklahoma City Symphony and stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's kind of chaos. You know, they.
It's a theme.
Well, they have their way of working,
uh-huh.
You know, because they really work every day, like a 9-to-5 job, you know. And, right. And you know, we're used
they?
To working. Well, I mean, you know, we're a band and we just work and work and work.
Aren't
until,
they just a bigger band?
Not really. I mean, because they're just such a giant ensemble, you know, and they do lots and lots of music. You know, it's not like, I mean, I'm doing just our music.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing everybody's music. I'm just doing my music, you know. So we spend a lot of time making every detail about it. Mostly, I mean, I think you relate to this. Mostly so we're not petrified when we go up there to perform. We feel like we've got this. We've worked on it. We've worked on it. And
right. And when in doubt, I've got the confetti cannon.
Well, yeah. But, you know, we just work on it.
Right. Of
so
course.
So we sort of feel like even
it's
if
tight.
It goes badly, we've done everything we can.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But with these orchestras, you know, you just have to work so fast because you're just another thing that they're doing. Not to dismiss it, but it's like, you know, they're used to working fast and they're good and they're not worried about it that much. And so it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're working on something that I want to work on a song for like a week. And they're like, we got 20 minutes. And you're like, oh my gosh, yeah.
Really?
So, and it's a big ensemble.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on a big stage and we're wimps, you know, we're a rock band, but we have in-ear monitors and we have floor monitors and, you know, just so you can hear everything that's going on.
Right.
And then you get there and everything is so quiet. You can't really hear, you know, whatever the horn section is playing over the string section.
Yeah.
You know, it's a panic, you know.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to do this thing, this performance at the big Red Rocks amphitheater there outside of Denver, we were prepared. Like, this is, you know, you're not going to be able to tell really what's going on, but we're just going to be in the zone and we're going
to
do it.
And you've been to Red Rocks before that, though, right?
Plenty of times, not with the orchestra,
right,
you know,
course,
just playing
right.
as, you know, just playing as a rock band or whatever. But so it was wonderful, but, you know, it's full of just, you don't really know, is this going good or bad or what? And then the audience screams and you think, oh, well, it must be going good.
And then
good.
You think like, yeah, but they'd like anything.
Well, in a way, but you kind of...
No, that's just the insecurity part.
Yeah,
no, I'm sure it was amazing.
But then listening to it afterwards and having some time to sort of, you know, hone in on the bits that... it's utterly amazing. It's the same as listening to it isn't the same as the experience of being there because it's just too...
I can't imagine it. Like, I just find that... I guess I was asking because, like, when I've been in a symphony space where a symphony's playing, I'm just sort of like, holy fuck.
No, so,
the force of it.
Oh, so, me, both of us. Yeah. It's insane because it's kind of mysterious as how it builds and, you know, there's all this stuff happening and it's utterly amazing. Yeah.
And it's like this music that no one, like 10 people give a shit about. It's like, it's so profound. Like, you know, like the time, I don't understand anything about classical music, but I just remember one time I was in New York, I had nothing to do. I was there for a thing and that was across from Lincoln Center. And I was just like, I'm just going to go over there and see if there's some classical music I can watch.
Just anything.
Yeah. I didn't give a fuck. what difference is it going to make?
Well,
I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you know a few of the things, Mahler's Ninth or whatever.
Oh, that would
Beethoven.
Be me.
Right.
Yeah. That would be me as well. Yeah.
But it was
just
like a Beethoven thing. It wasn't even a full symphony. I went in and I'm like, what is happening?
Like, it was amazing.
Of course it was amazing.
I know. It really is. I know. And it's like, and people think it's that kind of music. I wouldn't like it. But when you're there, it's powerful.
I don't buy the records. I don't do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but when I go, I'm like, you know, like I can barely
see. This is what I mean about your show. It's like, see, people would be guarded, like, oh yeah, I know classical music. Like, oh, don't give a fuck.
I don't, but
I love it. It's at the same time. I know, and you're like, I don't buy the records.
I don't have any records. Like I'm trying to do the jazz thing, and I'm getting in there. You know, I name some guys. I got guys I like with the jazz thing.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. Know? Yeah, yeah.
And some
I'm
of them,
same way. I'm same way.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah, but what, yeah. Who are your jazz guys?
It would be the same as everybody. You know, I'd have like most of the Miles Davis stuff. I'd have most of the John Coltrane. Right. I would have some.
Do you listen to any of that out there shit?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Cecil Taylor. Ornette Coleman.
Yeah, Coleman. Yeah, yeah. I mean, not all the Ornette Coleman, but there's
Albert Ayler. You ever listen to Albert Ayler?
But I'm not an expert, you know.
No, me neither. I know 20 guys, and there's 100,000 of them.
That's exactly what I say.
Jazz rabbit hole's deep. And the fucking thing about the weird thing about jazz is like, not to my ears, like I can tell the difference between most of the guys that I listen to.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah.
In the big picture, it's it's the same thread.
Well, you know? I understand. Yeah, right.
With rock and roll, you're like, I know those fucking guys. No one. You know.
Well, some people would probably say the same thing about what we think is like, you know, there's the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. They're like, oh, I don't know, don't they all sound the same?
No,
it's like, no.
Who is that person?
But they must, huh? They must.
Maybe. Someone two generations ago.
I don't, or someone that's, you know, 18 years old.
Did you
grow
up with country music?
Well, the good country, I mean, what I call the good country music, but not really. I mean, even living in Oklahoma.
Did you go to the state fair?
Yeah, but even at the state fair, they played Led Zeppelin, you know. I mean, I never went to see.
But Led Zeppelin didn't play the state fair.
No, but they would just play like Led Zeppelin on the rides.
Well, the New Mexico State Fair, like, you know, people like Roy Clark, Buck Owens, Willie Waylon, they'd come through.
Those guys would
George
play.
George Jones.
Yeah. And if it was like, one of them or something, but I wouldn't, you know, when we were younger, we wouldn't have known too many.
I was just wondering if you had it in the house or something.
No, I mean, my parents were from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they didn't, I mean, we had some music, but not very much. You know, back in the day, there was only, before anybody had just a bunch of albums, you know, growing up, we had a few Beatles albums.
Yeah,
my mother had the Tom Jones records, and she loved Tom Jones, you know. But not like tons of albums.
No.
You know?
No. Yeah, my parents had a few here and
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you know.
So this new record, how long did it take you to make it? If you take like, how well, like, it sounds like you're pretty meticulous. I don't know how the process works.
Well, we're lucky because I have a studio at my house, and then we always work with Dave Fridman, our producer, up in his studio up in New York. But we always have like three or four things going on.
Yeah.
You know, so you're always kind of, you know, there's some deadlines are here and some deadlines are far away. And you know, the idea that you always are always doing it, I think that's why you're so good at your thing here. You know what I mean? You're just always doing it.
Yeah.
And it's not like, man, if we don't get this one right, it's over. It's like...
Yeah, but I'm just talking to people and staying engaged. I mean, you got to like, you know, you're sort of like, can we make that guitar sound different or is this what we're doing?
Well... I mean, yeah, but I mean, I think creative people are just like messing around with stuff.
Well, yeah, stay in it. As long as you're engaged with the process.
Yeah.
Right, I get what you're saying.
I mean,
right.
I love it. I mean,
clearly.
I love making records, but
you
I love-
paint and you make movies and you-
Everything, yeah. I mean,
you make babies?
You
made a fucking baby since the last time I saw you. When I talked to you, I think you were producing a Kesha record or something.
We had done some stuff with Kesha, yeah.
Kesha.
I like how you called her Kesha.
I don't know. I don't know who she is. I don't know one song. You know, I don't know one. And I have nothing against her. I'm sure she's great, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the kids liked her.
I totally understand where you're coming from. Yeah,
but like, you worked with her, and then since then you went through a Miley period, it seems.
Well, we're actually staying at one of Miley's houses. That's why I'm here in L.A.
I mean, just to hang out with her.
Well, my wife she's here as well. My wife wanted to come out here for her birthday because she didn't want, I'm speaking for her, most of her friends won't listen to our show and you and me talk.
Yeah. Her friends aren't going to get mad at you? You think you're going to be okay?
Well, I just know we went to a wedding about a month ago in Bozeman, Montana, and it was outside.
Yeah.
And it's breezy and you're kind of, and everybody's kind of aware we're going to do masks, we're going to do the thing, you know. But the fucking reception starts and the DJ's loud.
Yeah.
People are getting drunk.
Masks are coming off.
Fuck. You know, and And I'm not saying that everybody's talking to everybody, right, you know, but there's, I can tell there's five or six dudes that are, they got to talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the music or whatever.
Wayne. Yeah.
And they're getting drunk and the music is loud and that's, you know, that's
they're
what
right
the problem is.
Sure,
it's
man.
That it's loud and they're going to go right here in your face.
Yeah, well, nobody, but it's also the problem is like nobody wants to be living like this. And everybody, there's that part of them that's sort of like, it'll be okay. And it's as soon as you have one cocktail, the it'll be all right.
Well, yeah.
Then you're just fucked.
Yeah, yeah. And especially, you know, five or six dudes. And so, and it is, it's awkward. You and I talked about this walking
coming
in.
Up,
it's awkward because you don't, at some point you're like, we've been going for 5 minutes, but now I don't want to do it. You know, you're always, it's always
it
like.
Freaks out. I just talked to Ray Seahorn and she went to some outdoor party with people she knew and there's only like six people and they were just sitting at a table and she freaked out. She had to go.
Yeah.
You know, like,
So luckily I had an excuse. I was going to go back to our Airbnb and check on our little baby and grandmother and stuff.
Yeah.
But part of me was glad that I got to leave because I was like, this is so we didn't want to have any parties or anything.
Right. Oh, I see what the point is.
And just to, you know, and I mean, so many people will want us to do something, especially with her. And so I think she was like, I'm not going to be here and we'll just be in an isolated house in L.A. And luckily, you know, this house of Miley's that we're in, it's very isolated. Everybody got tested and even the security guards and all that. So so we kind of feel like we're in the right, even though we're, you know, we're traveling around and stuff. I think we're in a good.
That's
good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. And you're having a nice time.
Oh, it's great. I mean, until the now everybody's worried about the
Fucking fire. Yeah, I know. There's no end to it, dude. I thought I was going to get out and get away, and I went to New Mexico, and that was on fire. Like, I was like, I'm just going to go to Albuquerque.
No, but your stuff looked great.
No. By the time I got to Taos, by the third day, it started to clear up. It wasn't a fire like here. They were just letting it burn off, but it was definitely that haze.
But there's not,
but
I mean,
Taos,
even,
it's a
even coming
better.
To you, you know, to just driving over here. I mean, the fires aren't right here, are they?
No. I mean, they're closer than I like, but you know, but they're not just up north now. There's one not far,
right?
But in Albuquerque, I drove up to Taos, and they were right outside of Santa Fe in Nambe. But there wasn't a panic there. They were just sort of like, no one lives up there. It's hard to get up there. They're going to let them burn off.
Yeah.
But it did fuck the sky up.
Yeah.
But so wait. So how old's the? What's your boy's name?
His name is Bloom, like a flower.
I thought he was a girl for so long.
Well, I know he kind of looks like a girl if you don't know. Yeah, but you know that's
here's what is so
got,
funny.
Like, blonde hair and
he's
beautiful,
kid.
Yeah. Thank you.
But
you
started sending pictures of that me. You started texting me pictures of you and that kid like the day after it was born, and then they come sporadically. It's not like you and I text a lot, but every so often a picture will come.
Yeah.
And for a while there, I was like, is he trying to get me to have a baby?
No. See, I would always wonder about that sometimes. Yeah. You know,
I see what he's doing. He's happy,
right?
And he's trying to get me to have a baby.
Yeah. See, I just sort of feel like. This is what I do with texting. I just sort of say, hey, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure. No, I love him. I love him. But I think it was just me having a conversation with myself.
But
maybe I have to have a baby.
See, I considered that about you. I thought he might be thinking that. But then I'll send you like some picture of some food or something, too.
Some food or you in a crown.
Just anything. Here's what I'm doing. What are you doing? And that way.
Here's what I'm doing. This like rays coming out of eyes.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, sure.
Or part of it saying, I'm a lot cooler than you are, and here's pictures to prove it. No, I just think that's the wonder of what you can do now.
What's that thing that you sent me? What's that one where you're wearing, both two of you have been wearing makeup and you've got a crown on? What was that from? I don't know who it was, you and some other guy.
I don't know.
You're blue, and one of them's got a crown.
Yeah. That was, we did like a Christmas video.
It was just this weird picture of you in makeup with a crown with another
totally.
Guy.
I'm blue.
Yeah, and I texted back, finally.
Well, no, I mean, that's what you do. Yeah. I mean, there's no way we would ever just call each other. Hey, what are you doing?
Do you do that with anybody?
No, I would never even liked it when we did it, you know, but just doing something that takes a second.
Yeah, I like it.
It takes you a second. You're
throw it back.
I know
fun.
What's going on with Wayne. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let me ask you though, like how did this, like, I mean, how the baby, cause it, like, it's like, I could see that, you know, the experience of it is profound, and that, like, you're these pictures of you where you're sort of like holding the baby, and even your vanity cannot compete with the love that you have for the baby.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think
did that come off as an insult?
No, all that's right. Great. I totally understand that. Yeah. You know, I think everybody has some level of a desire to nurture. I mean, even if you're just, you know, even just with your, if it's your friends or your family or whatever, you know, deep in you, there must be this. Some people obviously don't have it, and they're serial killers
they're
or whatever.
The president. Yeah.
You're right. And I just don't think you can ever really satisfy that unless you have an actual baby. That,
right.
You know, so I feel like.
Cats don't count.
All that does. I think that's why you have dogs and cats and friends and everything. You know,
it's not the real game until you get the human baby.
Well, I think having this now this centralized entity that you know without you is not going to. It's not. You know, it's not going to survive.
It.
Yeah, and like you're maybe the dogs and cats are the same way, but like your friends and you know your family and stuff. You know, they really are going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, but you somehow. Care about them. You care deeply about them. You want everything to be all right. So I think for me, I think now having an actual baby that, you know, you want to have your energy for and you want to be, you know, you want to be awake and smart and be there all the time. I think it just says this is important and these other things aren't that important. Not other things, meaning music and friends and all that.
No,
but there's a lot of gaps in when you're doing things that are you know, you're just like, well, I guess if they think it's important, it must be important.
Sure.
But now I sort of feel like I can, in my mind, I can say, this isn't that important to me. I'm not going to sit here.
Yeah.
You know.
Because I got a kid.
Or just to waste your time and waste your energy or to waste your emotional brain on.
Well, it's interesting now, even with this with the quarantine or whatever, is that for better or for worse, people are spending a lot more time with their families and their kids.
Yeah.
But I imagine at the age that he's at, it's like great.
Well, I know I hesitate to even say it. I mean, it is great, but I don't like to say because I know so many people are struggling without jobs and families are sick and all that. But I know, I mean, for us, I mean, and this goes back to like the way your show is. You know, it's like this element of time is time is part of everything that we do. Everything that we do is like, you know, it's the time that you spend with it is part of the equation.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a reasonably successful band that gets to travel around the country, play festivals, play shows, get invited to crazy parties, everything. I say yes to everything. And you just don't have any time.
Sure.
You know, you end up being on you're on a plane, you're at a sound check, you're doing a show, you're in a hotel. And all of it, on one level, is amazing.
Sure.
But there's just no time to even care that it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times when I would just say, I'm just going to sleep on the bus, even though there's a five-star hotel right there. I just don't want to get up and go in there because it's just another, it's just a bed and a toilet. I've got that right here.
Right.
I mean, I would be very thankful that it's all there, but there's just no time to like to appreciate it and
assess and take it in.
Yeah, you know, I always say like when you're the best meals you ever have are because you're hungry, not because they're the best meals made by the greatest chefs ever.
It's too much pressure.
It's just when you're hungry and you get to eat something good, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But if you're not hungry. Or you've already eaten something. I mean, they can be the best thing ever in front of you. You're kind of like, oh, well, you know. And I think a lot of our experiences would be like that, you know, where you are just flying through things so quickly.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that, too. Like, there, a lot of the noise has been turned down right now. You know, the pace has changed, obviously. I'm still doing this. But I was talking about this morning about how it's the same with, like, what you said about food. There's no silence better than the one after noise.
Yeah.
Right? So, but I mean, I think that also that I am feeling that as well, where it's like, because you and I are similar in age, and we've been working our whole lives to get to where we are and to do what we like to do, and we continue to do it whether we like it or not. We do it.
I love it.
No. I love it too.
Yeah.
But when you say yes to everything, you know in your head it's sort of like, this might be a little rougher than the other one. You know, but you do it. You know what I mean? Because it's what we do.
Well,
you know?
I say yes, and sometimes in my mind I think, I hope it doesn't work out, but I have to say yes.
Sure. I hope it doesn't suck too. There's that, right? So...
See, that's why I love your show, because I can't say that, but you can. Okay.
You could if you felt it. But my point is that now that there's literally like, you can't even be like, well, where do we got to be? Where's that band going? Who are we playing the bigger room? Or why are we in that room? All those questions, they don't apply because no one's doing
well,
shit.
I know. I know.
So it's, there's this peace, yeah. Right? So the brain is not comparing. The brain is not full of dread or anticipation of something happening. And you can focus on, you know, the apocalypse and gratitude. There's this weird mixture of like, things are scary, the chaos of life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But here you are with a baby and here you are with this life that you've built for yourself. And you have the time to be grateful.
Absolutely, absolutely, and knowing that people don't have jobs, and I have a great job that's allowed me, you know, some leeway here, and some people aren't very healthy, and I'm healthier than ever.
It's hard. It's a hard place to be. I started crying about that yesterday. I was talking to a therapist that comes to my house, again, you know, which is you know a luxury. But I just, the sort of weird balance of like, I didn't think I was going to make it. I didn't think I was going to have a life in this business. I mean, up until I started this podcast, it wasn't looking good. Yeah, you know, I wasn't making money. I couldn't sell a ticket, whatever.
You mean as a stand-up?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I just didn't think I was going to, you know, able to even live in my house anymore. So now here I am. Everything worked out. You know, a lot of ways. And now, you know, we've got the plague, we've got the apocalypse, you know, I'm experiencing tragedy, but like I have to still realize that I'm alive and there's a lot to be grateful for and a lot of people are suffering and I have to balance like, how do I, you know, continue to be empathetic with also experiencing gratitude, but also carrying a certain amount of fear and pain. It's tricky shit.
Well, I think you handle it amazing, if you ask me.
Thanks.
To hear you talk about it, because that's you're able to talk about it, and
right.
you talking about it made me feel like, man, you know, you made me feel good about all this stuff, and even feel good about like what's happening to you. And so I don't know. I think that's just part of the thing.
But I think with the baby, though, I got to assume, man, that like, you know, on any given day, just to look at the kid, like, and look, I don't think I need a kid.
Right, right.
But I do understand more as time goes on, the sort of joy and focus that like, despite everything else being what it is and the chaos in the world or whatever, the amount of love that transpires between, you know, you and your kid and your wife and around this family unit has got to be just,
well, yeah,
like, it has to erase everything.
Well, I mean, when he's there in his moment, I mean, you just, that's, it's easy to get.
I see, I'm idealizing. I'm forgetting about the parts where you're going like, oh God, when's this going to stop?
No, I don't think that.
Okay.
I mean, I think I would have when I was younger. I think I'm very lucky that it's happened to me in my late 50s. And I feel like I kind of feel like this is my third life.
Mm.
You know, there was my life before I got laid on the floor at Long John Silver's, and then I got to live my second life where I said, "Fuck it, I'm going to do music, I'm going to do art, and do this thing." And now I feel like now I'm living like a third life.
Yeah,
I get to do, you know,
the father thing.
But see, I think what I see in you is that you know things, you understand things. It's not, hey, I'm smart. It's like I've lived and
right.
I've been able to observe and listen, and so this, what's happening in the world, you can say it is bad, and I understand it's horrible for some people, but it's not that horrible for me. And even though these horrible things are happening to you, I would feel the same way.
Mm.
It's like my pain it's not the same type of pain, because I'm optimistic still.
Mm. You are.
Even when all this stuff is on you, you know.
You're an optimistic guy. You seem to be.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's the thing that we became aware of when we made this record in 1999, the Soft Bulletin record. I think we just never considered that
big
we
record.
Were. We thought we were going to make a record and just be like, the world's miserable. I told you, the world is dark and people are, you know, unfair.
Really? But you felt like you were that kind? I didn't listen to the earlier records close enough, but there was always sort of an uplift to it.
Yeah, but I thought, well, we're gonna sing what's in our hearts or whatever, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And if we're just bitter old fools,
yeah,
well, so be it.
Yeah. But you didn't. You didn't. You got. You know. Yeah.
But
you
then made I it, would hear it.
You made a break, dude. You know. Yeah, after softball, and then sort of like, well, I don't have to be bitter for a while.
Well, we weren't actually bitter. It just we sort of felt like maybe we got to. I don't know. I think we always envied rock stars that were kind of like miserable or something, you know?
Oh, but you guys pop though, right? So it's like, I guess like, but no one seems to do it like you guys do. It's a weird thing when I see pictures, like somebody this morning said, when I said you were going to come over, someone said he's going to come in a bubble.
Well, I would have. I would have. I've done that.
Everything you do, though, you guys do is sort of surrounded with this weird kind of, you know, creativity. Like, you know, you paint, you do the bubbles, you make the movies. Yep. It's a full, it's like, it's sort of a kind of, it's a psychedelic legacy. It's the next step into this, you know, otherworldliness. So I think that once you, I don't know how much of you really lives there, but it seems like a part of you does.
Well, I think that's just what creative people like. You know, they like having that.
But some creative people are making things with saws. I mean, you.
Yeah,
and you're making things with bubbles.
I would do it with anything. I mean, I think that's what happens.
I mean, saws. I mean, I'm not saying as a tool. What I'm saying is that there's a dark creativity, and then there's this thing that you're doing.
Well, yeah. Well, I think I'm very lucky in that way. Yeah. That it's sort of like no matter
that's what you think, that's where your creativity goes.
Well,
away from the darkness.
And I don't think intentionally. I think it's sort of like
I guess
like,
you yeah. Just, there's been some sad songs,
and you just follow whatever it is that you feel.
Right.
And
I forget there has been some sort of some heavy themes with the robots and whatnot.
Heavy, but still optimistic. I think that's the thing that we learned about ourselves is like just doing music and doing art and doing it and doing it. And then at some point, I mean, do you ever listen to like your old shows?
Yeah. Not you know? These, but like I've watched myself do stand up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and we would, when you're in the middle of making it, it's hard to tell.
Mm.
Is this good,
sure.
bad, right. stupid, okay. or amateur or whatever, you know? But sure. when you can kind of get removed from it.
Yeah.
I sometimes think I listen to some of our older records. Some of them are very old now, you know, 25, 30 years ago.
Isn't that amazing?
And I'm just like, I love them. I'm like, these dudes. They're
that's
going
great.
For it.
I found that too. Like, because like I they're not records, but I, you know, I used to think like when I was younger, I wasn't me yet. That I hadn't developed into me.
Yeah.
And then I watched this shit from like the late 80s, and I'm like,
wow.
I was me.
Wow.
I just wasn't confident, and I didn't, you know, I didn't have the wisdom. I didn't have, you know, I wasn't comfortable with myself. But I'm definitely me.
Yeah, yeah.
And my brain is the same, and the way I'm talking is the same, and what I'm thinking about is the same. It just wasn't there yet.
Wow.
But when it's did, me.
Yeah, do you feel like you're there now?
Sure.
I do. I feel like that.
Yeah.
I feel like that about you.
Yeah. I feel like that about you. Did you feel like when you were, did you think of yourself as not being there yet? Or did you always think we were there in the world and needed to catch up?
I only in the past, you know, like maybe 5 or 6 years, you sort of feel like,
exactly.
okay. And part of you just doesn't want to be done yet.
Sure.
You don't want to say, well, here I am. This is what I do. I still want to do a billion different
things. I guess
that's
true.
You know?
But like, but there is something to be said about like the fearlessness of being there. Like, it's not so much I'm done,
right.
but like, I know that the last two specials I did were the best work I've done. So if you could see that evolution, like this is really like, I'm on top of this and I have a little room to play.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It
right.
was, maybe it was someone on your show, even one of your shows said, you know, you when you have a little bit of success, you feel like you're kind of you're greased up. It's easier to do things because you can kind of even me being able to just text you and say, hey, I'm coming out there. Can I be on the show?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the greatest thing ever. And I'm just texting you about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in that way, there's probably 10,000 dudes that would want to be sitting here that would wish they could text you and say, hey, I'm going to be in town, you know?
Well, some people are like, why don't you interview a normal guy? Just a regular guy. Imagine it's going to have to happen at some point.
No, I think you would find, no matter who it is
sure.
you're talking to, you'll find them
true.
Interesting.
Of
yeah,
course.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, so for me, it's that. I think you feel like you've got a little bit of leeway.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're taking risks, doing what you want. And you're honing in on what really works and what satisfies you. And I don't know. I don't know. And we could still very well lose our minds in the next couple of years and never do it again. Ugh. I mean, you know, part of you doesn't really know why.
Well, that's the other thing I learned about this time. This quarantine time is sort of like, I saved a little money. I think probably enough to get me through the rest of life. And there's part of me that's sort of like, yeah, you know what? If I don't, if we don't get to do anything again, I did all right.
Well, that's, man, that's great.
It is.
Coming from you, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sort of I'm not gonna, I don't know if I'm going to beat those last two specials, and I don't know if any of us are going to ever be the same again. So if that's the last thing, because like, I'm in no hurry to do stand-up at fucking drive-ins. Do you understand? Like, there's a lot
of... Right, yeah, yeah. No, know, I totally understand that. Yeah, you mean like... I mean,
what's going to happen? How do we perform? What, you know, what happens now? And what is the point of reference? Like, now, whatever we end up, you know, if everything works out a little bit and we get through this, you know, it's going to be a different world. It's going to be a post-COVID world, and it's going to be like, it's a whole different sensibility. It's a paradigm shift of existence.
Well, I think that's where we don't know which way to hedge our bets. Is it absolutely different from now on? We never go back to being in a crowded, sweaty room where people are screaming at each other?
I wonder. We don't know.
Maybe you and I don't, but I don't know if someone that's 20 is going to say, I don't give a fuck, you know.
Sure.
Maybe, I mean, I don't know, you know, or is this the beginning of
year zero? Well, they still have to have a place, you know, to go. I mean, even if you're 20 and you don't give a fuck, you know, the club's got to be open.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's what I keep telling people as well. It's like, you know, I don't know if we, I mean, I, speaking to you right now, I'm not sure when this will air, you know, but it's like, I have 100 of these space bubbles that I go in over the crowd.
Yeah, 100 of them?
100 of them on the way to my house. Well, they're on the way to my house now.
Okay.
They just got manufactured in China.
Okay.
And they're on the way to my house hopefully in the next couple of days. And so,
oh, I saw the sketch. Is this the concert idea?
Well, you know, it started off as just a silly cartoon about, you know,
this is how you could do a concert.
The beginning of March,
right.
You know, we're all like, well, you know, this is funny, sort of, or, you know. And then...
The sketch of you performing in a bubble and the audience being in a bubble.
Right.
Right.
The Flaming Lips of 2019,
yeah, right,
I'm on stage and I'm in the bubble and it's just a normal concert.
Yeah.
And then 2020, everybody in the band and myself and the audience were all in a bubble.
And you're like, wait a minute.
Well, right at the beginning of the... we're calling it still a pandemic.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was a pandemic when it started, but
it was.
The people at the Stephen Colbert show,
right,
said, hey, would you guys be interested in doing one of these? Now we know they're called home concerts, you know, but even then we were like, yeah, you're just going to kind of do a video and then we'll air it.
Right.
That's the way the show's going to be for a while.
For the rest of time.
Right. I mean, at the time, I think we were thinking another couple of weeks or something, you know.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that suggested this. Could we make this cartoon come to life just for like the Stephen Colbert show?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, let's see what we can do. They helped me get some of the space bubbles. I had a few, but I didn't have that many. And they were coming from China, so I got a few, and they helped us get quite a few more. And we did this show.
It's good that the president hasn't stopped your space bubbles coming from China.
Well, we're not going to even talk about it.
Yeah,
okay. You know, okay. that's the way I operate. Like, look, I'm not asking permission, you know.
Yeah.
But we got them, and you know, even when we got them, we still didn't know how long is this going to be going,
right?
Or is it just going to be
right?
We'll all be over or whatever. So we did this concert, just like four songs with 27 of us all in bubbles.
Oh wow.
And it's ridiculous, but I mean it does work. I mean, I guess that's the part of it that's like, well, yeah, I mean you can breathe and you're separated and all that sort of stuff. That absolutely works. But we thought, we're not really going to do this, right? And now, you know, we're going into like, people are talking about not till next summer are we really thinking about trying concerts. And I'm like, well, I don't know if some of these places will survive till then. I mean, the places we're talking about, remember the Cane's Ballroom in Tulsa? I mean, it's famous because, we live in Oklahoma, but it's one of the, it's the only building left standing that the Sex Pistols played in 1977.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But these are the types of venues that, you know, another 6 or 7 months.
But they're going to disappear. They're going to disappear, but like structurally, they're not going to disappear. It's not like buildings are going to disappear. It's businesses will disappear. But like, you know, I don't know. I understand. Like, I know all these, and it's terrible, and I want all the venues to come back. But it's not like there's somebody waiting to go in. I don't know why they, you know what I mean? Like,
Why you can't,
like, I guess you can't, but like, it's just the idea of, because there's, you know, people who work there, and it's all terrible. But I mean, why can't you just put these, all this stuff in an induced coma? Like, they have the rest of the economy. It's not like landlords can stop charging people.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it takes a big cooperation of saying, okay, you know, all these things that we were, you know, going to be paying out every month, we're going to stop that. But it's not like that.
Yeah,
you know. And I think these places are just, they've been made in the sort of way of like, it's a lot of people crammed together, drunk as fuck,
yeah.
Music is loud, best thing ever.
Yeah.
Used to be anyway,
yeah.
You know. And is that all going to change? So a place that used to hold like 1,500 people packed, now is it only going to be a couple hundred people? How's that going to work? And how are they going to make any money?
Weird. Yeah, I get it.
So I sort of am saying we're going to try to do shows with these space bubbles only as a way of saying this is the way I am trying to do something. If everybody out there tries to do something, maybe we'll really come up with a solution instead of waiting and saying, well, we're just going to wait till it goes back to normal, because there might not be a normal to go back to. It may not ever happen. And there may be another virus that comes. There may be 10 more waiting for us.
Great.
You know, I hope not.
Yeah.
But this could just be the beginning of the new world that.
Yeah, adapting, you know? And just math. So,
yeah.
It's a sad reality, but people do adapt. And I'll try to hold on to some of your optimism. So
Yeah. But, you know, standing in front of you, I have to say, you know, you do have that about you.
Mm.
I think, you know, that's part of what makes you funny, is that you really are moving ahead, trying things, wanting things to work, loving the world.
Yeah.
And you've got that shelter of being like, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, you know.
Yeah.
But in front of you, You're great.
Yeah,
you're giving me a lot of hope.
Good. Yeah, yeah. I'm not dragging the everything down into a hole with me, is what you're saying. That's good. That means somehow or another over the years or whatever I'm going through, I don't know where I took the turn, but yeah, man, you know, it has to do with sort of like, well, let's make the best of it, right?
Well, when you started to do the podcast,
yeah. That was a bad time.
That was you saying, I've got to do something?
No, I was like, you know, I was in trouble. I'd just gone through that fucking second divorce. I was going broke. I couldn't sell tickets. You know, I literally thought, like, well, I'm never going to be a big comic. I'm never going to do movies. I'm never going to do TV. And, like, I don't know how. And, like, the idea of being just sort of a B-room, you know, like, I couldn't take it. So I was like really suicidal. And you mean
really?
Well, I mean, I don't think I would ever do it, but I didn't have any solutions.
Right.
And so it was really this weird Hail Mary pass with no expectations, because I'd done some radio, me and the guy who still produces the show with me, my business partner, you know, made this thing. We did this with not knowing anything. And it was the thing that turned everything around.
But why? I mean, whose idea was it to do this, like a podcast? Podcasts back then were still like...
Well, I'll tell you. We had just done something at... I'd just done a streaming video show long before anyone was watching those. And it tanked. And I was working for a company, Air America, and they fired us. And we still had a month on the deal. And they let us stay in the office, and they had radio studios. So I knew that Carolla and Jimmy Pardo and a few other people were doing podcasts, like comics. I'm like, can we try this? Can you figure out how to put it up and what we got to do? And he said yes, and we just committed to doing a new show every Monday and Thursday.
Wow.
And that's what we did. And we started there in the studio in New York, and then I moved out here and started doing it in my garage. And we have done a new show without missing one since September 2009.
Wow. And it was because you kind of, well, we got this place where
we got the equipment, we can go in there late at night and just hijack the place and figure out what we're doing and figure out what the show is. And then it kind of evolved into a show where I invited people I knew over to talk about my problems, basically. And that's
It still is. I'm here to help you.
You have. You have. And I appreciate it.
I mean, that's so, that is so punk rock. And you felt like it worked?
Well, it's like we didn't know what was up. You know, like at the beginning, you know, there was no way to make money. So, like, I was offering people swag. You know, if they sent me some money, I'd send them a T-shirt and a sticker. Like, right, I had a fucking house full of stickers and T-shirts and packing envelopes. And, you know, we had one advertiser. It was like Adam and Eve sex toys and shit.
I mean, we knew about your podcast.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was popular in vans. You know, the musicians kind of figured it out.
But you did it and you thought...
We had no expectations. I just knew that I needed to stay engaged, and I knew that, like, I knew that I was okay on this type of mic, and I knew that I could, do it. But, like, so many things evolved and happened, and, you know, how it got traction. But it took a while for any of us to sort of figure out how we could make a living at it.
So even though it's succeeding, in a sense, how do you make any money?
Got all these people. Yeah. How do we get them to give us money?
Yeah.
And that sort of evolved the model. Like, there was a community of us that came on around the same time, and, you know, before everyone was doing a podcast, and we figured some stuff out. But it all kind of, there was a community vibe that evolved. And, now I still love it. I love it in the sense that, like, I'm nervous and anxious and don't know what the fuck is going to happen every time I talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Yeah.
And, like, some days I'm like, oh, fuck. What am I going to do with that guy?
Because you don't know them, or
I don't know most of these people.
Yeah.
So you don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, I've listened to some of your shows where I know you know a lot about them, and then I've listened to some where you don't know anything about them, and that's where you just go for it. Yeah. That's what's so inspiring. You're like, here we go.
He's like jumping off the mountain every time.
I just like talking to you.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
So now let's go out into the raining ash.
Is it ash? But it really is just from grass fires and stuff, right? It's not like volcano or something.
No,
right? I've been in volcano ash.
Is it somehow better that it's just half the state burning and not a volcano?
Well, it didn't seem. I mean, you know, we're in Oklahoma where there's tornadoes and shit all the time. I never consider like that. It's that hazardous.
Have you seen them up close? The tornado.
I never have. See, this is the ridiculous thing. It's like the first time I was in Canada. Mm. I saw the fucking Northern Lights.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. Yeah. And I'm talking to guys like, I've lived here my whole life. I've never seen them.
Right.
I've lived in Oklahoma my whole life.
Yeah.
I've never seen a real tornado.
Huh.
I know. I want to go chase one down.
Well, you can. I don't know. You don't need to.
You can, but I mean, I know. I kind of.
That's not the hobby you need to take up.
Well, I would feel stupid now if I went and chased one and then got paralyzed or something. I know. But I know when they're happening, I'll drive down the road to see them.
Maybe someday it'll just come down your street.
Well, I kind of want it to, but kind of not. But it would probably come down at night and I wouldn't be able to see it or something. Yeah,
That's the big fear.
But
the dogs bark at a tornado. It's not going to go away, is it?
Well, we have the best weather guys ever, you know.
Good.
They can tell you if it's on your block or not. It's insane. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully no tornadoes, but someday maybe you'll see one.
I hope so.
Or maybe you can facsimile it, and maybe you can make one at one of your concerts.
Man.
Maybe that'll be the next thing.
Man.
People in space shuttles twirling around in a vortex of air.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I'm just pitching ideas. Good seeing you, Wayne.
You too. I love you.
Love you, man.
Too, man.
Yeah. That was Wayne Coyne talking to me here in the garage behind some plexiglass. The album is American Head. It's the 16th album, the 16th studio album from the band Flaming Lips. You can get it now wherever you get music. Oh, yeah, I should tell you about this. I did a panel thing with the cast of Glow. It had something to do with registering voters, and, you know, part of the deal is we do this panel. I think it's available on YouTube somewhere. I know that's vague, but it turned out to be a very emotional and kind of a cathartic thing for a lot of us, because we didn't know when we took the gig or when we did the service of registering people to vote and then to do the panel that we were going to be canceled. So it was not a happy cast of Glow per se, but it was a reflective and somewhat sad cast of Glow, you know, talking about the show. It was an interesting thing and a touching thing to watch. All right, so take care of yourself. Mind your mind so they don't mine your mind. And I'll play some guitar similar to other guitar I've played at other times. Fonda, Monkey, Flying Cats Forever.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.